Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. I want to welcome each and every one of you. Thank you so very much for your belief and your trust in this platform, in me, in Eric the Tech, the man. He is the man. He's off camera. He's a man. It's Friday, Eric the Tech. How are you?
Good. I think I'm a man.
I'm just a man today. You are the man.
Woke up and I decided to be a man today.
Oh, you kind of, okay, so, yeah. Speaking of that, if you go to HagmanReport.com, real quick, I don't want to take any time away from my guests today, but real quick, there's a restaurant where I live in Erie, Pennsylvania, named Lori's Wild Ridge Restaurant. They busted their asses. Yes, I'm saying asses. They busted their asses to comply with all of the ridiculous, insane, hoops that were made by bureaucrats in Erie County, Pennsylvania, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. They attempted to abide by the laws, by the insane social distancing, by the mask wearing, they did everything right. They employ a lot of people. It's a family-owned business. It's a family-owned restaurant. They're on Facebook.
A popular restaurant.
Exactly. Now, for whatever reason, I have not been able to get on Facebook. Gee, I wonder why. For a week now. Okay, but they're on Facebook. It's a popular restaurant. Some person filed a complaint with the, I don't know, health department saying, well, they're not social distancing enough and they're not following the rules and they should be shut down. Let me tell you something, all right? And there was a Facebook posting by Lori's Wild Ridge Restaurant, and they said, I'm sorry. You know, it's, we've tried to navigate through this maze. I mean, it ripped my heart out. Because I know the owners had they did everything in their power and they put their blood, their sweat and their tears in building this fine restaurant. I'm going there today. I'm going there this weekend. I had, earlier today, I had their beer battered fish. It's really good stuff. But they're saying, on Facebook, they're saying, I'm sorry. Because of this one call and the fallout from this one call, they're going to be forced to shut down. They're trying to get out. They said, we're done. We can't take it anymore. We're done. That is what this communist regime has done. When I say communist regime, I'm talking about the state and I'm talking about the county or the Commonwealth and the county. I'm talking about Richard Levine and Tom Wolfe. I'm tired of it. I don't really even know these people on a personal level, just from going in and out and talking with them. Nicest people in the world. This governor, the governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and I know I've got a lot of Pennsylvania listeners, I want to tell you something. He needs to be voted out. Him and that Cousin It need to be voted out. Or Cousin It needs to go. And by Cousin It, I'm talking about the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Health Services, Health and Human Services. I am royally jacked up about this. Anyway, go to HagmanReport.com for all the print information. Peter Barry Chalka's information, Hagman Report Live, Bright Eon, and, of course, HagmanStore.com. Let's bring Peter on. Peter, I'm not going to take a minute more of your time. Come on board. Let's I have to do this one thing. Folks, tonight, a final briefing, or a final briefing. See, what's wrong with me? I'm Joe Biden. I'm Joe Biden. You know, the thing.
What's up, creepy Joe?
Yeah. Let me smell your hair, Eric. I just get so riled up. Hey, Peter, let me smell your hair. Hey, hang on. All right.
Peter just pointed a 9mm in the camera.
I would, you know what? If I get that way, tell me you're taking me for ice cream and just, you know. All right. Bet you guys can't wait for tonight. Folks, real quick, final warning, the conference, final warning conference, October 16th, 17th, 2020. Here's the deal. If you sign up for the video on demand for the conference, sign up today, sign up right now. And then join us tonight for a private briefing between, I'm going to be hosting with Steve Quayle. Steve Quayle and I are going to be having a private briefing. Your questions, in fact, send in your questions to conference@gen6.com. That's conference@gen6.com. Conference@gen6.com. But seriously, sign up for final warning, the video on demand, the streaming, and you will then be invited to our private briefings. These are going to be held every Friday, I believe, from now until the conference. All right, for the next six Fridays. All right, with that, let's bring Peter Barry Chalka on. Peter, how are you, sir?
Doing okay. And
sorry, man. I'm going to give you time.
All right.
Back.
It's good to start the show with a laugh and some humor because it's going to be downhill from here. But good to see you and Eric tonight, and I've got a really heavy potpourri of news and analysis. And just a quick note, as bad as it may seem, things will be 1,000 times worse if the worst happens and the Democrats take power in 60 days. It's 60 days from today until the 2020 election, and next Tuesday will be 8 weeks. So lately I've been starting or finishing every broadcast with three words. It's kind of become my mantra, and this arose because people would ask me after a broadcast or an article, they'd say, well, Peter, now you've given us all the bad news, all the terrible things that are happening. Is there good news, or what do you think is going to happen? What are you predicting? Well, as I've said before, I don't predict. I report and allow readers and viewers and listeners to decide. But as a journalist, I've come up with this three-word mantra, which I like to repeat, because repetition is important, and also there are always new viewers and listeners tuning in. And that is, at this point in 2020, pray, influence, and vote. Pray for discernment and strength in the 8 weeks ahead and beyond. Try to influence everyone you can, however you can, to vote and to vote to save the country on November 3rd. And be sure to vote yourself, absolutely sure to vote yourself. And to paraphrase someone who commented on C-SPAN when we're looking forward to the election, President Trump is not perfect. But in the choice that's before us on November 3rd, he is really the only choice. And, you know, how important it is to get this message out on this platform. In 2016, President Trump won the Electoral College because of approximately 70,000 votes in three key battleground states. Now, the Hagman audience is at least that large and probably larger. So that's the kind of margin that can make a difference in the presidential election. So everybody listening to or viewing this broadcast and every broadcast between now and November 3rd had better get active and use your influence for the right outcome. Now, there's so much news this past week. It's just picking up the pace, if that's possible. It really is impossible to keep up. But I try to look for patterns to connect the dots to try to make it at least a little easier or at least possible. Now, the bottom line right at the start is the combined forces of the establishment in this country, which encompass now almost everything, politics, law, academia, public education, popular culture, and now even big sports, they've come together in the greatest collective effort in our history to target and destroy an elected political figure, President Donald Trump. And it grows more obvious by the day, but it's no less sickening. And in fact, just last night, Thursday night, an article appeared in The Atlantic magazine. This is the oldest continuously publishing magazine in the United States. It started, I think, in the 1840s. And they have a huge story, which has captured the news cycle today, alleging that President Trump, several years ago, spoke disparagingly about American military veterans who lost their lives in battle. Now, I'm not going to give this story any more time or traction or bother linking to it, but it's based on several anonymous sources, unnamed, of course. It's being denied by people who were in the presence of Donald Trump when this supposedly happened. And it looks like another fake news piece to me, but we shall see. Now, right now, today, I would say we're in the midst of Civil War 2.0. We've been talking about Civil War 2.0 for quite some time. Here it is. Just last night, Thursday night again, or maybe it was early this morning, Friday morning, an undercover police officer in Cleveland who'd been on the job for about 25 years was basically assassinated in his vehicle along with a confidential source. And there are three suspects who, I believe, were being sought, and it's possible that they have now been captured. But it seems like every day that goes by now, there are more reports of police officers in this country being attacked, injured, and or killed. And again, this is what the beginning stages of a civil war look like, where authority is now under attack. And those attacks are either not being condemned by the powers that be, particularly the Democrats, or they are being lukewarm attacked, as in what Joe Biden has said recently. We also now have the cancel culture, and it's really gone to this next level now of violence. So that if you don't agree to cancel yourself, if you're a conservative, if you don't agree to suppress your opinions, if you don't agree to just shut up, then the radical left is going to dox you, and if necessary, attack you physically and even try to kill you. And in that, they may succeed, as they did last weekend in Portland when a pro-Trump demonstrator was assassinated. And I think it was late last night, his alleged killer was himself tracked down and killed in Washington State. But already, I've cited this poll before, I think, or this study, 75% of self-identified conservatives in the country now say that they are afraid to speak their opinions. And this raw violence we are seeing continuing nationwide, it intimidates. It intimidates further. It's done on behalf, normally, of authoritarian regimes throughout history, and it works as a strong arm tactic now of the cancel culture. Now, on the media front, the mainstream media front, this just gets worse and worse all the time. We haven't hit bottom yet, and that is really unbelievable. We have now, as I said, a full spectrum assault on President Trump. And as I've mentioned before, the big lie is fully in place now. And the big lie has been used repeatedly throughout history by authoritarian regimes in the era of modern media. But these regimes in the past, whether it was Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union, Cuba, Venezuela, these authoritarian regimes, communist regimes, had total control, government control over their media. Well, these days here, enforcing the big lie is the media that is supposedly not government controlled, but it's corporate control, but it's the same thing. The big lies proliferate. Now, yesterday is another example, which is truly sickening and frightening. And Eric, I sent a photo that can illustrate this. It's a cartoon that ran with this article in the Washington Post, you know, one of the most influential papers in the country, supposedly. This is the cartoon that accompanied this article, and it shows, for listeners who can't see it, a caricature of President Trump clinging to the drapes in the Oval Office as we see an arm trying to drag him out of there. Presumably, this would be January 20th next year, and he's been defeated, but he doesn't want to leave, and he has to be dragged out. And the article, as Breitbart described it, Washington Post says election 2020 will end in violence unless Biden wins a landslide. The far-left Washington Post blackmailed the country Thursday with a threat framed as analysis that says only a landslide victory for Joe Biden can save us from violence. Meanwhile, we have sick politicians doing their part, and I have a video clip which hopefully is ready to play next. This is something that New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo said in a radio interview within the past week, basically commenting on how Donald Trump is not only not welcomed in New York, but that if he showed up in New York, he would need even more than the Secret Service to protect him. And Eric, if you have that clip, could you please play that now? It's a short, about 40 seconds or so.
Look, the best thing he did for New York City was leave. Good riddance. Let him go to Florida. Be careful not to get COVID. COVID ambushed New York due to Trump's negligence. He is the cause of COVID in New York. Changed his residence to go to Florida. Why? He can't come back to New York. He can't. He's going to walk down the street in New York? Forget bodyguards. He better have an army if he thinks he's going to walk down the street in New York. No, New Yorkers don't want to have anything to do with him, and he knows it.
Now, to me, that sounds like a veiled threat against the President of the United States, at the very least. And it also suggests a kind of a dog whistle sent out to the unbalanced among us, who number possibly in the millions, mostly on the left, who would take this kind of speech on the part of the governor of the state of New York to heart, and maybe it would inspire someone to actually try to physically harm President Trump or someone in his family. I mean, this is absolutely disgusting, and this kind of thing continues day in, day out on the part of these corrupt Democrat politicians, and they're just digging in their heels and doing it even more. And obviously, we haven't seen the end of it yet. Now, yesterday, Joe Biden was in Kenosha, Wisconsin, kowtowing to the criminals. Now, I believe in my previous appearance last Friday, I talked about the background of Jacob Blake Jr., who was shot by police in Kenosha, Wisconsin, almost 2 weeks ago now. And he was in the process of committing another felony. There was a warrant out, allegedly. There was a warrant out for him for alleged felonies, including rape, violent rape, that he's accused of several months ago. And he's got a rap sheet as well. So he's no choir boy, of course. But it emerged a day or two ago that Jacob Blake's father, Jacob Blake Sr., who I first took note of last weekend, I think it was Friday, when he spoke at the March on Washington anniversary at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, and he gave a incendiary speech that reminded me of like a Black Panther speaking from the 1960s. And so this guy is really ready for his moment, his 15 minutes of fame. And sure enough, because he is a radical with experience in this kind of rabble-rousing, but he's also an anti-white, anti-Semitic, anti-Christian zealot. Breitbart, among others, has gone into Jacob Blake Sr.'s Facebook, and it's all still online. I haven't checked it out myself, but they have screen grabs of disgusting anti-Semitic, anti-white posts that he has made, anti-Christian as well. Now, here's an example. I just wanted to show this one for viewers. This is a Jacob Blake Sr.'s Facebook page, and it's a photograph that he either posted or reposted from someone else's column, someone else's Facebook, showing a photograph of a portrait of Jesus Christ in a toilet. So, Eric, if you have that, could you please just put that on the screen? Now, I know it's disgusting, but this is who we're dealing with, and this individual, Jacob Blake Sr., is the man who Joe Biden met with for more than an hour in Kenosha, Wisconsin, yesterday. And then he, Joe Biden, has the nerve to call Donald Trump and his supporters names, like racist, for example. You can't believe that the depths that all of this is falling to. Okay, meanwhile, the insurrection, of course, is being egged on by the powers that be. Here's a couple of recent examples that may not have come to everyone's attention. There's a new book out that's titled In Defense of Looting, if you can believe that. And it's getting a lot of coverage. It got a very long interview with the author on National Public Radio, our tax-supported national commercial-free radio network. And it was titled, One Author's Argument in Defense of Looting. Now, that's bad enough. But this insane meme is actually being translated into policy now in some Democrat jurisdictions. And now, this is actually happening nationwide, but it's generally not admitted to. It just amounts to charges being dropped against looters and other violent criminals, or they're never being arrested at all. But now, in Contra Costa County, California, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area, prosecutors have said that, prosecutors have been ordered that they should take looters' needs, quote unquote, into account before they're being arrested or charged with a crime. Looters' needs. I guess if a looter feels that he or she needs to steal that flat screen or that, whatever. Well, that's a factor. That should be taken into account in whether or not they should be, whether or not they should be arrested or prosecuted. Now, I want to get into something here which I think is going to be an original analysis. And I have to say, because it comes from this, arises from this, I've wondered how it is in modern society that the low-life criminals, the Mike Browns, Trayvon Martins, Freddie Gray, George Floyd, and this latest Jacob Blake Jr., they're all criminals, you know. That's the reality. That's the fact. How is it they, because of their violent encounters with police, become, they're raised to an exalted position, like hero status? I mean, how did this happen, I wonder. Now, I remember in the 1960s, there was perhaps the beginning stages of this. There was a criminal and a convict named Eldridge Cleaver, who became a Black Panther, I think, when he got out. And he was in prison in the 60s for violent rape. But he managed to write a book in prison titled Soul on Ice, and it captured the emerging leftist zeitgeist of that era, the 60s, and he became an icon of the left, particularly the white guilty left, you know, college campuses, white female college students in particular, I think fell in love, it's safe to say, with Eldridge Cleaver. And I experienced that for myself, having been a college student around that time. And as I said recently, we have a whole range of people, some of whom I named, all of whom had criminal backgrounds, were allegedly engaged in crimes or were proven to have been engaged in crimes when they encountered police officers, and the rest is history. Now, I recall that when I studied English literature in college, there was a literary and philosophical concept of something called the noble savage. Now, I have to point out, of course, at the outset of this brief analysis that this term and the way I'm going to discuss it is not specific to any race, ethnic background, or color. It's a historic term that was used starting in the 18th century to refer to primitive peoples. And as the Europeans were exploring from Europe in their sailing ships and sailing out far and wide to the far corners of the planet, they were discovering various primitive peoples on the different continents that they were visiting. And around this time, in the late 1700s, there arose the myth of what was called the noble savage. It was most commonly attributed to the 18th century Enlightenment philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau. He believed that the original man was free from sin, appetite, or the concept of right and wrong. And he thought this was a good thing, you know, in contrast to the monarchy and the elite of the times. This was around the time of the French Revolution, which was leftist, of course. And so he wrote that in his time, those who were deemed savages, you know, in these far-flung, undeveloped countries, they were not brutal, but they were noble, hence the term noble savage. Now, throughout the 19th century, as empire swallowed up indigenous lands, the idea of the noble savage receded. But this is something I discovered, and I felt almost like our friend Diana West in this and her studies on what she calls the red thread, the role of Marxism and communism throughout Western society and now peaking today in the United States. So the noble savage reemerged in the late 1800s with Karl Marx's critique of empire in the late 19th century. And it was expressed most powerfully by Marx's writing partner, Friedrich Engels, who tied his revolutionary hunger for freedom from Victorian restrictions to the belief that human societies were originally led by women and were characterized by the absence of jealousy and a state of almost continuous free love. Now, Engels' noble savage, his resurrection of that meme, you know, the co-author of the Communist Manifesto here, this proved particularly appealing in the 20th century and became a kind of pagan foundation of the Soviet Union after the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917. It provided a philosophical and literary argument against both Christianity in Soviet Russia and the West. Now, I never knew this until I started researching this past week. So I also found out that the communists in the Soviet Union held that free love was a gift of the revolution. They were obviously trying to destroy the nuclear family, and they were pushing this promiscuity. It reminded me of the Muslim terrorists who were promised, 71 virgins if they died as martyrs. Well, it reminds me of that when you read about this BS that lured people into the Soviet orbit in the many decades of the Soviet Union. So the commies held that free love was a gift of the revolution in their attempt to recreate this perceived sexual freedom of the indigenous peoples. Now, this was also captured and promoted by the neo-Marxists starting in the 1960s and 70s. So isn't it interesting that all of this was going on in intellectual circles while the radical movements on the ground, in the street, in the prisons were going forward to find and run up the flagpole these new heroes, which were actual criminals? And then there's another aspect of this too, icing on the cake maybe. Another version of the quote-unquote noble savage flourished in as part of New Age romanticism starting in the 60s and going until the current time. The New Age, we know, credits indigenous peoples often with special powers, you know, such as healing or enhanced spirituality. And many New Age practitioners, and I've actually witnessed this myself in the years that I covered alternative medicine, many New Age practitioners practice like dancing and drumming circles at gatherings of actually licensed naturopaths. I witnessed this before they would have their medical meetings. They would jump around outside and dance in circles and beat drums and chant. These were attempts to recreate these indigenous ceremonies that they worship, but probably with very little true understanding of their original meaning. So I think if you draw back the lens to a wide-angle view, you can see that this concept of the quote-unquote noble savage has something to do with the grounding of today's fascination with and approval of the criminals who are running through the streets, rioting, looting, burning, and committing other criminal acts too numerous to mention. So, and so it goes, I guess. But back to
I did not want to interrupt you. Because I spent some time at the beginning of the show, but it's a pretty good depiction of how things are right now. Please continue.
Well, I thought that I had not heard this before. I mean, I remembered the literary and philosophical concept of the noble savage. I didn't specifically think of it in relation to now, but when I started, you know, it popped into my memory and I thought of looking into it, this is what I came up with as well as what I remember from back in the day. And I think it's worth exploring further and maybe thinking about. But
indeed, yes, yes.
You know, and now I wanted to, you know, of course, related to everything we've been talking about is the COVID-19 pandemic psyop. And I have a few, hopefully, new thoughts on this with the information that's coming out. If I can find the right screen document here. Give me one more second.
By the way, folks, if this is your first time tuning in, and I know we're getting new listeners and viewers all the time, Peter Berichaka, peter.media, that's peter.media, at Pete Shaka on Twitter. Follow him. The man, the myth, the legend, Peter Berichaka. And I appreciate him. I'll tell you what, he is really number one journalist in my book. So go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Doug. Right back at you. Okay, here's some new news on the vaccine and the mandates, and both of these are going to be very, very big in our future, vaccines and mandates. Now, on September 1st, I wrote an article for American Thinker, which was, it was based on this. The night before, Laura Ingraham, she interviewed President Trump, and she raised the issue with him of whether or not a COVID-19 vaccine or vaccines, which he has been pushing as part of his project or his Operation Warp Speed, whether these vaccines would be mandated by the federal government when they are finally available, assuming they are. Now, she asked this, in my understanding, was the first time President Trump has ever been asked about this. And I first wrote about the possible mandates for a vaccine back on May 16th at American Thinker when I wrote this. During the past 2 days, that is April 14th through 16th, President Trump has engaged the military in a project called Operation Warp Speed to fast track a COVID-19 vaccine. Remember, he announced that the military would be lined up to help distribute a vaccine when it became available later this year, he said. Continuing, President Trump's promise of a vaccine implies words like mandate, monitoring, and immunity passports. So I wrote about it then, and I wrote about it again on September 1st. Now, Laura Ingraham was the first person to ask President Trump this specific question, and he didn't really specifically answer it. Fox News sent me a transcript of the entire interview with Laura Ingraham and the president, And he implied that it wouldn't be mandated. And meanwhile, Fauci, Anthony Fauci, the top infectious disease official, obviously, said recently that the government would not make a vaccine mandated for the general public, although he added that individual jurisdictions could make it mandatory, including for some groups like school children. Now, that leaves the door wide open for mandating at a state and local level. Now, in this article at American Thinker, September 1st, which anyone interested can find by going to my one-page website, peter.media, and there's a link there to all of my articles at American Thinker for free reading, with the most recent at the top when you click on that link. And that's the most recent article, September 1st, if people are interested in this in depth. But what I found in addition to this discussion of the federal possible mandating is there are states that are already either saying they're going to mandate a vaccine or they're mandating other vaccines. So listen to this. On August 21st, Virginia's health commissioner, Dr. Norman Oliver, said he plans to mandate a coronavirus vaccination for everyone in Virginia once it's made available to the public. Now, a bit later on, the office of Governor Blackface Northam slightly modified that and backed away. But at this point, it's unclear where that stands in Virginia, because these different deep administrative state health authorities are coming up with different perspectives and predictions on this. Now, in Massachusetts, in the People's Republic of Massachusetts, north of Virginia, here's what's going on there. And I'm going to quote a few lines from an article by WRKO Boston talk show host Jeffrey Kuhner, who is a major figure in New England media. I'll tell you, he wrote this: Massachusetts is taking a big step towards liberal fascism. Governor Charlie Baker, the governor of Massachusetts, who's a rhino, a Republican in name only, and his administration — those are my words, by the way — but Charlie Baker and his administration seek to compel every student to take a flu vaccine, whether they or their parents want it or not. The State Department of Public Health has recently said that all students attending school, public, private, or parochial, will be mandated to take a flu vaccine prior to December 31st, 2020. If they don't, then they will not be allowed to go to school. The order covers the ages of children as young as 6 months up to adults who are 30 years old. It applies to kids in childcare, preschool, kindergarten, K-12 elementary and secondary education, as well as college students and even university graduate programs. The only exemptions will be for medical or religious reasons, but states are getting rid of those exemptions as we speak, so who knows. Now, last but not least, LifeSite News reported about a week ago that Texas, the state of Texas, is mandating vaccines for all kids in public schools, even if they are learning online. In other words, the whole panoply of vaccines recommended by the medical industrial complex have to be given now to every student in every school in Texas, even if they are being homeschooled or learning online. You can see where this is going, right? You can see where this is going. I talked last Friday here about the basic lockdown in this country now, that you already need the equivalent of an immunity passport to travel from one state to another in many cases. If you want to go to any of the Northeast states now, you have to file all kinds of paperwork in advance with that state government, your personal health history, your contact information, where you're going to be staying, how you can be contact traced, and you have to quarantine when you get to New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, et cetera, for 14 days and not leave the room that you are quarantined in. And you're going to be checked on every day by some contact tracer, either by texting or a phone call or in person, if they wonder about you and want to confirm this.
Last time I knew, Peter, that's called prison.
Well, last time I knew it was called unconstitutional, but it's happening. Nobody's talking about it in the mainstream media, and I haven't even heard or seen much at all in the new media on this. And is that because people have just given up traveling and they don't even know what's happening or they don't care? You know, one by one, our freedoms are being ripped from us. In this last 6 months, next week it can be 6 months since we were locked down, and there's no end in sight. By the way, I want to mention that one of the best sources of information on the developments with vaccines and what the medical industrial complex is doing is Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s organization, Children's Health Defense. Eric, I sent a PDF of their current newsletter, which I think they come out with about once a week. And this is gold-plated. You can just scroll down. It's about 11 pages. But I'll just take a quick look. Hopefully you're able to scroll that or whatever. Yeah. You know, article after article. Press in, here's an interesting one. Press in his pocket. Bill Gates. It documents how Bill Gates has given $250 million to leading mainstream media in this country, not and also outside the country, the BBC, PBS here, and even some networks. And he who pays the piper calls the tune. Of course, they're going to kowtow to what this lunatic is saying about wanting to vaccinate everybody on the planet. But there are numerous other articles, and this is all available for free reading. These are written by serious professionals, attorneys, and health experts. I mean, this is not BS. You can take this stuff to the bank. And, you know, I never thought that I would be in Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s corner, but I have to give him and his organization a ton of credit here because, you know, they are doing the work. And I just want to mention this, too, because needless to say, just to wrap up the vaccine discussion here, once the vaccine or vaccines are made available, they are going to be mandated for travel. I mean, maybe the government won't put a gun to your head and say you've got to take it. But if you want to work, go to school, travel, stay in a hotel, whatever, leave the house, you're going to have to show proof of this vaccine. And if you don't, you're going to have to stay in your room. So that's where this is all going. Now, this PSYOP that started 6 months ago, now the pandemic panic, has overnight thrown everything into an authoritarian state here. I mean, we are mimicking what's going on in Red China now instead of what used to go on here in the United States. And it's the medical, deeply embedded medical bureaucrats and the politicians, most of them Democrats, who are now in charge of our lives. And the Constitution is apparently no longer in effect at all. And because these policies go forward without the rule of law, just by fiat of a governor or some state health official or somebody like Fauci. And what has made all of this possible, this lockdown, and this not only lockdowns, but this transformation of society? And I want to cite here the article that the New York Post published on August 17th, which I've mentioned before. It's titled New York City is Dead Forever. And the author of that, James Altucher, if that's how it's pronounced, he has a very interesting concept in there. Before and after bandwidth, BB or AB. He points out that in 2008, the average bandwidth on the internet was, the average speed was 3 megabits per second. Now, so a Zoom meeting or doing all this stuff remotely was not possible. The bandwidth wasn't there. Well, now we have high-speed bandwidth in most of the country, and the average of the country nationwide is at least 20 megabits per second, during which you can do all this high-speed remote stuff. And he said that this is what's made our new lives remote, virtual, isolated possible, because we can now live the almost complete, unobstructed virtual reality on our phones or on our tablets or on our laptops. And it's only going to get more so with the introduction of 5G, which is going to kick the speeds up exponentially. And so this is what's contributed, for example, to the destruction of New York. Broadway is closed probably forever. The museums in New York are closed. The restaurants for in-restaurant dining are closed. And I read this morning that the New York Hilton at Times Square, an enormous high-rise hotel, is closing permanently, laying off hundreds of employees because there's no one left visiting New York City because there's nothing to do there. You're basically in lockdown. And according to de Blasio, this is just going to, continue in perpetuity. So before bandwidth and after bandwidth, it's an interesting concept. By the way, I have something on de Blasio I just want to quote here. The worst mayor in the United States, maybe ever. He gave an interview on last Friday, August 28th, to WNYC, the NPR public station in New York City, which welcomes him, of course, I think on a weekly basis. And he said this was a discussion about schools and opening or closing them. But here's some of what he said. He goes, this is Mayor de Blasio, direct quotes. You're talking about nice white parents. Everybody's feeling very good about themselves. But you really want to change things in this city? Then everyone better change a lot of the way we live more foundationally. If you just talk about it and feel self-satisfied, God bless you. Well, why would he say that? He's an atheist. Continuing, that's not actually going to change things. What changes things is redistribution of wealth. Tax the wealthy at a much higher level. Make sure that working people who in this city are overwhelmingly people of color get higher wages so they can afford better housing. Help me tax the wealthy. Help me redistribute wealth. Help me build affordable housing in a white or in white communities, end quote. Now, if that isn't out of the Communist Manifesto, I mean, it's an absolute carbon copy of Marxism, Communism 101. Redistribute the wealth.
Warren Wilhelm Jr. Many people, believe it or not, I spoke to someone the other day, did not know that Bill de Blasio used to be, well, was born Warren Wilhelm Jr. And up until he was known that up until, I think, 2002. But yes, indeed, a communist through and through in communist policies. And you shall know them by their deeds and by their works. And look what he's doing. You're right.
Now, another commie in our midst is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is the second most influential American politician on social media, second only to Donald Trump. And she conducted an interview in Interview Magazine, which was founded by Andy Warhol many decades ago. I didn't realize they were still publishing. And she conducted an interview with another Democrat socialist candidate, and there is Representative Ocasio-Cortez. She is a frightening individual, and Joe Biden has said that she will be his go-to person on the Green New Deal if he's elected president. So she conducted this interview with a fellow socialist/Marxist New York State candidate, which is titled Freeing People from All the Existential Havoc that Capitalism Wreaks, end quote. Wow. So, I mean, there's just no doubt now that the communists have taken over the Democrat Party, if not many of the power centers in this country. 2 years ago, as I've reported here ad nauseum, I had trouble getting anyone to go on the record and use the word socialism as it related to the Democrats. Well, here, 2 short years later, they are unabashedly calling for communist Marxist redistribution and crowing about how socialist they are. And, of course, that's what their platform is, too. By the way, this outrageous thing occurred this week, and I downloaded this report because I could not believe it. And it literally, I would say, brought tears to my eyes, because when I was young and even in elementary school, I was fascinated at an early age with the city of Washington, D.C., the monuments, the museums, the history. And I convinced my parents to plan a weekend trips to Washington so I could visit, get a look at it, you know, the Washington Monument, the Jefferson Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial. Well, the lunatic mayor of Washington, Mayor Bowser, Muriel Bowser, she spent, I think, millions of dollars convening a panel to study every street name, building, and monument statue in Washington. And if it makes the cut in terms of the new woke necessities, you know, you can't have anything that's not woke and compatible with the leftist Marxist meme that now dominates these cities. So this multi-page report was published. I downloaded it, and it recommends that the Washington Monument, which has been in place for 200 years, the iconic Washington Monument honoring our first president, which is 555 feet tall in Washington, that it be taken down or moved because Washington, President Washington, owned slaves. Similarly, this report recommends that the Jefferson Memorial, which has been there for about 100 years honoring Thomas Jefferson, be bulldozed, be removed, be taken down because Jefferson owned some slaves. And these are the high points or low points of this report, but it talks about removing multiple dozens of scores of names from buildings, from streets, taking down statues, and Bowser and company, Mayor Bowser, don't have the full power to do this yet. But if Biden is elected, he has promised to make D.C., Washington, D.C., the 51st state. Right now, D.C. is run by the federal government, as it has been since year one in this country. So these commies locally will be able to do this. They'll have the power with two senators and a representative and the fully powerful local government to do anything they want. And if you think they won't do this, well, think again. They've looked the other way when all of these statues have been taken down and desecrated and destroyed. So nothing will stop them.
It's amazing. And that would be unconstitutional too as well. But
you cannot believe what you are seeing. You just can't believe it. So, you know, there was, I don't think I mentioned this, the individual who, stop me if I already mentioned this. I'm so overwhelmed. I can't even remember what I'm saying 1 minute to the next, but the individual who allegedly assassinated Kyle Rittenhouse, the pro-Trump supporter, was himself, killed in a raid in Washington State last night. Did I mention that? That was,
yeah, but still, I mean,
that's worth mentioning twice because, yeah. While we don't necessarily celebrate the death of anyone, this character bragged. Actually, he admitted doing it in a Vice interview that went online yesterday. They tracked him down for a video interview. So I'll leave it up to the audience to say whether he got his comeuppance there. But one of the witnesses in this killing of him, this murderer, basically, was that he shot off 50 rounds at the officers who were trying to arrest him. So he did not go peacefully, but
he kind of sucks as a marksman. But it was a gun battle, and I'm upset how the left is beginning to deify this man. You know, and make these straw man comparisons between him and Kyle Rittenhouse. And
at the same time, blame Kyle Rittenhouse. He was to be blamed there for being on the street peacefully with no weapon. You know, he deserved to be assassinated.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And before we run out of time, I want to mention these two things in closing. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned this horrible, can't really call it a song. It's a piece of work, rap and hip hop, by this really despicable individual named Cardi B, who apparently is the most popular person recording right now in the United States. And she had this piece of work called WAP, initials which the words cannot be broadcast because they're obscene, as is this piece of work of hers. And yet it's on YouTube to this day. And if this actually had come about, if this, the lyrics to this had been published or broadcast a decade or two ago, it would have been prosecuted as rank obscenity and disgusting. And now it's the number one, either most downloaded or however they determine this, best-selling piece of, I can't even say music. I don't know what to call it, this piece of garbage. And I see it as a metaphor, you know, as Breitbart, Andrew Breitbart, who said, politics is downstream of culture. And this, to me, epitomizes our popular culture today. This person, Cardi B, whose work, you know, it can't even be described. You can't even describe it because it's so obscene and disgusting. And yet she is a multi-millionaire selling this crap, and people are buying it. And the people buying it are voting. Now, one other thing I wanted to not fail to mention, a number of people have called this to my attention starting a few weeks ago, and I followed up on it, and it came to a head this week. The California legislature passed a bill reducing the penalties for certain sexual activities, I will not name them, with willing children on the part of homosexuals. Yes, California lawmakers, at the insistence of the LGBTQ activists, passed a bill this past Monday, 4 days ago, that would reduce penalties for adults who have sex with a willing minor child if the sex, quote, offender is within 10 years of the age of the victim. So you could have a man who's 21, for example, having sex with a child who's 11, and that would be now okay in California by this newly passed law. Now, it's on the desk of Governor Newsom awaiting his signature, and I can't imagine that he would veto this bill. So something that as recently as a couple of weeks ago might have been thought to be absolutely impossible is now about to become law in the state of California. And as we see, California is very, very influential in the policies of the nation. So there it is.
I can't believe how much ground you covered, Peter, and I want to thank you for that. What a wrap. And you were correct when you said, you know, chuckle it up at the beginning because it's only going to get worse from there. And you were right.
Well, I end on this again. Pray. I mean, if after hearing this, people are not on their knees praying, I don't know what else to say. Pray, influence, and vote.
Amen.
That's it. And that'll give us at least 4 more years, hopefully, if God is on our side on November 3rd, 4 more years to at least keep this insanity at bay for a little while longer and give us an opportunity to organize and educate and influence and hopefully reach the good people out there and maybe have a resurgence of our faith, if that's possible. And that's going to be what that is what it's going to take to save this country. But for the moment, right now, we've got 60 days left. Pray, influence, and vote.
Again, the man, the myth, the legend, Peter Barry Chaka. Peter.media is his website. From there, you can get all of his writings, American Thinker, and so forth. That's Peter.media at Pchauka on Twitter. I would urge everyone to follow him. And by the way, if you think you are following him, check again, because they've been whacking off followers. Sorry about that. They've been chopping off followers. Peter, thank you so very much. You have
thank
a great
you, Doug.
Weekend.
Thank you, Eric. God bless.
God bless. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. Good to be right back. Stay where you're at.
on what the mainstream media won't, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. I want to welcome you. I want to thank you very much for your support. May God bless each and every one of you who support this platform by way of your prayers, donations, being members of Patreon. Thank you very much. PayPal, thank you. Mail, I read everything. I don't care if it's written on a napkin. I read it. And may God bless each and every one of you. Thank you so very much. The smartest, most intelligent audience in the world, I believe. And with me is Austin Brower, healthmasters.com. That's healthmasters.com. Before I get to him, I want to mention final warning, the final warning, Brace for Impact conference, October 16th through 17th. That's going to be done virtually, of course. Go to gen6.com. That's gen6.com. Folks, if you sign up for today, because I'll tell you why. Tonight, Steve Quayle and I are going to be, well, actually, Steve, I'm just going to be superintending the download session, shall I say, or the private intelligence briefing for those who have signed up for that video on demand. That's gen6.com. Sign up for video on demand, and beginning tonight, you will be invited to our private intelligence briefing by Steve Quayle. All right. With that, healthmasters.com. If you have not ordered from healthmasters.com ever, then do so now. Please stop what you're doing and go to healthmasters.com and order there now, especially your ultimate multiple vitamin B, C, all of the letters. Appropriate letters. And you know what, folks? Do me another solid. Listen to the Ted and Austin Brower Show every weekday. There it is right there on the upper right. Just click that and click through that, and you can get to their current and archived shows. You can listen live Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m., and Sundays from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. But again, it's important, folks, that we take care of ourselves. The product of the week, of course, Superfood Complete. Ooh, boy. You can read about it. And I'll tell you what, the prices, I like to say you really get what you pay for. And I think in this case, you get more than what you pay for in terms of quality. The products are the best on the market, in my view. Whether it's vitamin, I'll tell you what, when you take a vitamin B capsule from Health Masters. Try this. If you have any vitamin B tablets, capsules, or whatever from some generic place that you get it, you know, and you order from Health Masters and get it in, go ahead and take one B, the one that you have from in the cupboard. Take that one, I don't know, at 3 o'clock or no, I'll say noon. And then, you'll be waiting and waiting and waiting. And then take vitamin B at like 3 of Health Masters. I guarantee you will feel the difference. So many products there. Please go shopping. That's healthmasters.com. Healthmasters.com. HR5 is a coupon code. Austin Brower is my guest with me. How are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm blessed as always, Doug. How are you doing today?
Very, very good. Can't see.
We got visual on here. You guys give me pull up on.
Yes. Boom. Come on. There you go. All right.
I'm here. You got me.
Look at a handsome dude there. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard you said about the B complex a minute ago. Yeah, I do have to give a little bit of a warning out to a lot of customers is that if you take those products, the B vitamins, late at night, they can keep you up some. So just be aware of that. I've had some customers call me up, they're like, yeah, you know, I took my B complex with dinner at like 7 p.m. and, dude, it's midnight and I'm writing you this email right now. I can't go to sleep. I don't know what to do. And I'm like, yeah, don't take them in the morning time. Best time to take them over lunch. Don't take them too late because they can keep you up.
Well, what I do is I take two capsules. I open them up. I empty them on the table. I take a $100 bill, roll it up, and I snort it. Okay. Like a line. I was looking for a DeLorean to do that off the back of, but I couldn't find it. So I just do it on my desk and it gives me a good rush. No, I'm serious. I'm just kidding. Of course, don't send me emails saying
fake news. Don't do that.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding, of course. But no, seriously, the B vitamin really gives you a lot of energy. Get up and go. So it's good stuff.
Absolutely. No, I do appreciate it. I've been getting a lot of emails, a lot of phone calls from customers all over the country asking us different questions. So we're here to help everybody out the best we can. So I really do appreciate all the support. The first thing that I've been researching and kind of looking at over this week is something that's been grossly troubling to me is that, as we know, you know, Facebook, Twitter, all these really, really far left communist social media sites now have been doing everything they can to pretty much eviscerate Kyle Rittenhouse after what happened. And I know everybody's got their own opinion on it. I get it. Everybody's got their own opinion on what happened. Even the DA that's charging him with first degree murder, it says in their report about the one individual swinging a skateboard at him after Kyle had been knocked to the ground. So I don't understand where they're coming up with this whole, you know, intentional homicide and manslaughter. I mean, this whole situation is going to be something very interesting to watch. But what's troubling about it is the amount of censorship from the left from preventing people from being even able to talk about it. The first thing that I saw earlier this week, you may have seen this, Facebook and Twitter have been doing everything they can. So one comment that was made on Twitter this week is somebody said, Kyle Rittenhouse will go down in American history alongside the brave unknown patriot at Lexington Green who fired the shot heard around the world April 9, 1775. That's a quote from a Twitter statement. Well, it was immediately suspended, and Twitter posted up the reason why. And they said, we have determined that this account violated the Twitter rules. And I'm just quoting what they're saying here specifically. Violating our rules against glorifying violence. We prohibit content that condones or celebrates acts of violence. We also prohibit the glorification of mass murders or genocides when protected categories have been the primary target or victim. Now, I don't know if that was just a canned response. She sure seemed pretty strange that that's the canned response when literally somebody just compared a guy that's being charged with murder that defended himself on the ground while he was on his back getting beat with a skateboard against Antifa rioters with somebody that basically shot the first round in Lexington and saying that basically they're violating the rights because they prohibit glorification of mass murder and genocides of a primary targeted victim. So I was like, okay, maybe that was just a twitch on Twitter. Well, no, it's continued to happen. Then another one went on to say here and on Facebook. So video is posted on Facebook of Kyle Rittenhouse helping an injured protester. This is a video that they don't want anybody looking at, apparently. And they said, here's the video. We told the cameraman that he brought a medic kit, which is his bag he was carrying, further providing he had no malicious intent by showing up. In fact, he was there to help anyone who needed it. Here's the video posted a couple days ago. Facebook automatically suspended them. They said, Facebook declared this post against its standards. Our standards on dangerous individuals and organizations, we do not allow symbols, praise, or support of dangerous individuals on Facebook. We define dangerous as things like terrorist activity, organized hate or violence, mass or serial murderers. So again, you now have Facebook right in lockstep with Twitter essentially claiming that Kyle Rittenhouse is a mass murderer or some other category that falls under this prohibited activity. When you got to remember, they're not showing something that's like some graphic footage. They're simply discussing what happened, whether you're for him, you're against him, you're indifferent. we do have the right to free speech, and we're not talking about a mass murder here. The guy basically killed two people in self-defense, at least one of them we know from video footage. And again, your opinion's your opinion. Everybody's got their own stance on it. But this is getting oddly weird how Facebook and Twitter are literally any time he is mentioned in a positive light, they're banning it. But wait, there's more. Now, it came out yesterday that Discover has told Forbes their customers are essentially forbidden for donating money to Christian crowdfunding page set up for the 17-year-old. Facebook's been blocking links to the Give, Send, Go page for Kyle Rittenhouse, which has gathered over 380,000 in donations so far. Now, just a day later, the Christian crowdfunding site page dedicated to raising money for Kyle has been now targeted by Discover. The corporation explained it terminated their merchant account for operating regulation violations. They go on to say, we appreciate that terminating this merchant acceptance agreement may be inconvenience to a small number of our customers. Discover makes no judgment about customers' use of their funds as a payment processor. However, we terminate acceptance only in instances when there's found to be a violation of our operating regulations. And then they didn't go into any further what violated their operating regulations. So now, giving money to somebody's attorney campaign online has now been essentially banned by Discover. And this is what slowly happens. And this is, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse is just pretty much the prime example of this right now. How long is it going to be, Doug, before anybody that's an opposing voice starts basically having their accounts shut down? We already see it with Twitter and YouTube and Facebook, and people's accounts are shut down on a regular basis. Heck, last show I was on, the show before that or whatever, they pulled your show on that I was a guest on YouTube. Yep. They said I violated their guidelines.
Yeah, it was you.
Back and listen to the show. I mean, I didn't violate anything.
I know. And by the way, folks, we're on Brighteon, Brighteon, Brighteon. We're there. That show that was taken down is on Brighteon. And, we're not going to be silenced. And if we look, everything's backed up on our servers, and we'll just flip the switch if we're taken off. But you know what? It's true. For those people who don't have that access, what are they going to do? And I find when people, don't have a soapbox, they turn to the bullet box.
There's no doubt about it. They're trying to completely crush any type of opposition. You can see that's the goal here. They want to prevent anybody from being able to say the truth. And of course, what they say goes now because they own all these platforms, and it was done like that intentionally. That's why the CIA funded Zuckerberg from the very beginning, because they wanted to make sure they had a foothold as an investor from the start so they could control how that platform operated in the future. And now, obviously, you see how there's individuals in Facebook that work as fact checkers that are retired CIA analysts. I mean, really? That's the job position? You work for the CIA for 2 decades, and then you go, you know what? I'm going to take a job as a fact checker for Facebook. That's my lifelong goal. It's really what I want to do in my life. CIA was boring. I really want to be a fact checker. And then you start realizing those fact checkers, every single one of them that I have researched and done background into, every single one of them has been involved in some type of government agency, and or it belongs to a far leftist group that only promotes that agenda. Every single fact checker I have found, Doug, everyone without fail so far. And if somebody can prove me wrong on that and find a legitimate certified fact checker for Facebook that is absolutely 100% neutral, not left, not right, completely has no affiliation, no government entity, never worked for the feds, basically moved in as a private sector and worked from, you know, some type of basis job, like worked as a server at Steak and Shake or something like that, and now is a fact checker, I'd be happy to look at them. I have not found one. They all are specifically handpicked to do the job they're doing, and that is to control the narrative of what's happening. And now you see the more and more that the left is getting violent with their communist agenda. Essentially, again, like I said before, it's the Bolshevik Revolution 2.0 here in the United States. You have the same people that are protecting them and giving them, you know, basically kudos, a pat on the back for doing it, are the same ones now that are saying, hey, we're not going to prosecute you. Sure, I'm sure you saw yesterday, Costa County District Attorney Diane Becton expressed her view, she's a district attorney, that officers should consider whether rioters robbed and looted. Essentially, she didn't say that. That's what she implied. Rioters robbed and looted. I'm putting that in there because she likes to say it in a politically correct way. Whether the targeted business was open or closed, and at the time any looting took place, was what the manner and means by which the looter had managed to get inside the business, and consider if the looters needed what they stole before filing the charges. So basically what she's saying is you need to go around and you need to talk to everybody and ask them, you know, why'd you steal that 80-inch television, sir? Why'd you do it? And if they go, I really needed an 80-inch TV. I wanted to watch bigger TV. And they said, you know what? I can't blame you. 80-inch is a big TV. That's pretty cool. I would like to have had that too. You know what? You looted it. It's not a big deal. Try not to do it again if you don't mind. We'd really appreciate it. You can go on your merry way with your TV. That's basically what she's saying here. If anybody has seen videos of people looting supermarkets and taking out cartons of milk and bread and food and bananas and strawberries, I'd love to see photos of them, because every time I see buildings get looted, they either get fully burned down or they hit the cash machines and then they go steal a bunch of nonsensical stuff like Legos and TVs and shoes and then they burn it down. I haven't seen anybody looting buildings and taking food. I said this on the show today, and I mean, it's just a fact. The reason why nobody's looting food is because nobody's hungry, because everybody that's looting is more than likely on some type of government subsidy, including WIC or SNAP or something like that. They're not hungry. They don't need food. They already get free money for free food every single month. I mean, that goes all across the board. It doesn't matter what race or where you live. The people that are doing this in most cases have an agenda to do so because they want to go be criminals and they don't have a need for hunger. If people were legitimately ransacking a supermarket and you saw them running out with their children in the car with loaves of bread and peanut butter and jelly, I think a lot of people would go, listen, we really need to evaluate what's going on in this society as far as in this city and how we can help some of these people. If they really are that hungry, they're resorting to this. I know I would. If I saw that locally, I'd say, listen, we got to start getting more stuff to the food banks. I'm going to start cleaning stuff out. Let's try to help people. Nobody needs to go hungry like that. You know, trying to take their kids to the store to go steal food. But it's not that. That's the thing. It's completely different and opposite from that. So you really have to see, why are they protecting these people? Why are they doing this? Well, then the answer is the agenda. It's a communist overthrow. It's a communist revolution of the United States of America. We're watching it proceed and open up right in front of our eyes. And the problem is most people right now are still too busy arguing with one another about whether or not they should have to wear a mask in a store. Granted, that is a huge topic. And I encourage everybody, if you have a patriotic brain and you understand that the masks do not work and they're there for your submission and your control, don't wear a mask. If you really feel like you need to wear a mask somewhere, wear a mask. It's your choice. That's the difference, and that's the problem that I have with what people are pushing. They're taking your ability of free choice, and they're demanding it through tyrannical law by saying, you have to wear a mask or you can't be here. You have to wear a mask or we're taking your money. Some cases, you have to wear a mask or we're arresting you and throwing you in jail. That's the biggest issue I have with the mask. You cannot enforce some type of normalcy with people. You cannot enforce morality. If somebody wants to wear a mask, they can wear a mask. They don't want to wear a mask, they're not going to wear a mask. There's never been a point in time in history where the government's been able to come in with an iron fist and legislate people to do stuff simply for the greater good. Look what happened to Prohibition. Prohibition was an abysmal nightmare. And there were so many things behind Prohibition besides just alcohol and morals. That was a sidestep to it with the whole aspect of alcohol and cars running on alcohol and everything else. So what you have to look at is when they do this, how far are you going to let them take it? How far are you going to capitulate and continue to say, okay, you have 5,000 people outside in the middle of the street right now, shoulder to shoulder with no mask, burning down cities, and we're saying it's a peaceful protest, or they're looting because they may need some of that stuff they're looting, but you walk into a store and don't wear a mask, and people want to yell at you, scream at you, criticize you, belittle you until you have to get out. That really is something in society we need to evaluate, Doug, and it kind of says something very sad to me, honestly, about where we've fallen as American civilization and what the constitutional rule of law and freedom of choice really means to people anymore. When you have looters rioting and pillaging and being told, well, before you arrest them, see if they needed the stuff they stole before they burned the building down. But you have people getting arrested and fined for not having a mask all the way up their face down in Miami right now with, you know, undercover mask police. That says something very poor about society right now, to be honest with you.
You know, if I can address both topics here, they're interrelated, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Just to be clear, Snopes, Oh, that's a false claim, according to Snopes. That's just false. That's BS, where Contra Costa County's DA said that. She really didn't mean that. That's not what she meant. This is according to Snopes, okay? Well, Snopes can kiss, you know, anyway. When you read how Snopes tortured that whole thing is beyond comprehension. But the thing I found interesting in doing a search about this Diane Becton's history, I found, of course, that back May of 2018, did you know that George Soros backed her? She said that she is an admitted plagiarist. She was at that time a candidate for district attorney, and he funneled $2.7 million in California DA races. And of that $2.7 million in California DA races, Becton, I believe, let's see here, in the Contra Costa County DA, her campaign received some $275,000, again, from George Soros. Now, George Soros, to me, in my opinion, is like a bad rash, okay? You can't get rid of it. I mean, you know. But anyway, so very interesting. Very interesting. Now, if I can, it's a little not really self-serving, but you know, you talked about masks, right? Do you have that Facebook page? Austin, this is a restaurant I frequent. This is on Facebook. And this appeared this week. I think it was appeared yesterday or the day before yesterday. I think maybe Wednesday. And I want to show you this is run by a family. This is a family-owned business. It's Lori's Wild Ridge Restaurants. And if you and they jumped through every hoop asked of them. They did everything in the book to comply with the standards of Erie County Department of Health and Pennsylvania, their Mr. Levine's regulations. But there it is. This is a sad state of affairs in America where I'll just read it. I would like to thank the coward that called the health board to report that we had too many people in this restaurant. We have gone above and beyond to keep our staff and our patrons safe. It is because of people like you that we will be getting out of this business as soon as possible. Thank you from all of our staff, our super great patrons, and Kevin and Lori. Kevin and Lori are the owners. The reason I am angry, I'm very angry about this. Okay, so you've got a business, and these owners, and I frequent this business. I don't know these people personally, but I frequent this restaurant. The staff is always great. They've done everything to play by the rules. And you got some numbnut calling up the Department of Health saying, oh, they had too many people in the restaurant. So the reason I brought that up, masks, okay? And by the way, every time I went in there, you know, people were respectful wearing a mask to go in. You know, like they're asked to do. Personally, I wouldn't, but okay. But the fact is, this is America of today. And I want to know who in the hell that coward is who called and why they couldn't have just, this smacks to me of a number of things. None of it is legitimate. None of them are legitimate. But I want to show that to you because I know you've had experiences. But here's a business. Here's a couple saying, you know what? We can't take it anymore. This is what America is being pushed to. This is an exhibit of what you talk about, what you and your dad talk about every week, and what we're going through. And I mean, we're all going through this. Austin, when's enough enough, brother? Oh! I wanted to show you this too, and I'm sorry, and then I'll kick it back to you. This, in case you haven't seen it, is in front of Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco house. These people are stringing up blow dryers and hair curlers and such on trees in front of her house because, you know, she visited the hair salon and was seen violating her own or their own rules. Not, you know, it's the rules are for the little people, not for her. I just found this rather humorous. In my personal Twitter account, which I don't suspect I'll have for very much longer, I just put today's blow dryers tomorrow, you know, basically a question mark. So there you have it. I'll turn it back to you, sir.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when you see what's going on further and further and further, this is being done not to protect anybody. Like I've said this 100 times, the aspect of protecting people and the government's doing this for your protection is one of the most laughable ideologies you can ever even possibly come up with. If they were possibly trying to protect people, they would say, hey, you know what? We've seen numerous research studies for decades that D3 levels are important for the macrophage in the body and that the immune system relies heavily on D3 to be able to fight off virus infections. They're determined by scientific evidence based on 50 years of research study that we suggest everybody make sure they're taking adequate doses of D3 right now during this alleged pandemic. That's something they could have said back in March. And there'd been full validity to back that. And what's interesting about this, I've been saying this for months, and I finally had a buddy of mine whose wife's an RN. He came in yesterday, and I'm saying this for months. I said, I would love to see, I wish somebody would do it. I've been begging people in the medical field to do this. I said, every single person that ends up being in critical condition, like real sick from allegedly from COVID, even though now we know per CDC, all the people that died, only 6% of all the individuals that have died actually died from COVID and not other two or three other horrible, debilitating diseases they already had. So we already know that the numbers were massively extrapolated on and that it was already people that had heavily compromised immune system. That's a whole other standpoint. But what I was asking, and I've asked this to numerous people, and I finally got a partial answer yesterday. What are the individual's D3 blood levels that have been admitted in the hospital or in conditions or bad conditions or critical conditions or died? What are their blood levels? And one of my buddies came in yesterday, and his wife's an RN over the hospital down the road, next town over. And I asked him a couple weeks ago about the same thing. And he said that his wife, you know, she's basically one of the big RNs over there. She has been encouraging everybody, you know, because they do blood draws obviously all the time when you're admitted to the hospital like that and you're really sick. So they've been doing blood draws, and she's been asking the doctors, you know, to make sure they're doing D3 tests on the blood work. And the doctors are like, yeah, sure, that's fine, whatever. You know, we're just trying to make sure. So she works in like the COVID ward, like full, they're in full gear all the time. He said head to toe, respirator, gloves, suit, unbelievably hot. You got to completely strip down and decontaminate if you got to go to the bathroom or do anything. That's how they handle the COVID ward. So when you see people walk around and they put a little bandana or a little t-shirt over their nose, it's only for compliance and nothing less. That right there tells you it's not about health. But back to what I was saying about D3. She said now that every single person that she has had their D3 levels tested on, every single person that's had their D3 levels tested in the hospital right now has been sick. Every single one without fail had extremely dangerously low levels of D3 in their bloodstream, like down into the teens, like 10 parts, you know, as far as in their bloodstream. Minuscule, tiny. And I said, isn't it funny that we know, and we've had research come out, I think, 3 or 4 years ago from a medical institute that said D3 deficiency is one of the biggest health crises we're ever going to experience in the United States coming next, because like 60% of the population is D3 deficient. Interestingly enough, nobody ever really seems to talk about that. Nobody brings up in the mainstream media. And this is why Ted and I have been talking about it for months. Every person I know without fail that I have worked with, including myself and many of my friends who tested positive for COVID, when I put them on ample doses of D3 and ample doses of vitamin C, most of which don't even know they got sick. They're like, yeah, I was kind of tired for one day. They're like, but quite frankly, if I didn't know I tested positive for COVID, you know, positive test, they said, dude, I would have thought I was run down or didn't get enough sleep the night before, ate something bad, you know, and kind of had a headache. That was it. I said, yeah, I know. I said, and you're like the 30th person that's told me that. Not exaggerating. I said, vitamin C, D3, crucial. Iodine's also really important as well for the body. But if you can't afford anything and you're trying to maintain proper health, the D3 and the vitamin C are 100% crucial. There are decades of research, my friends, showing that vitamin C and D3, all the way back to current research now, even in 2020, showing the exact same thing. That D3 and vitamin C are crucial for the immune system in fighting off viruses and bacteria. So don't take my word for it. Do your own research. You can even go on our website and type in articles on D3 and vitamin C, and you'll find a plethora of them on there as well. So understand that your body's supposed to breathe in basically unadulterated oxygen. You're not supposed to recirculate your own air. You're not supposed to breathe in basically the hot gas that comes out of your mouth, so to speak, your fumes. You're supposed to get fresh air in all times. Oxygen is the lifeblood to you. I mean, that's how you stay alive. Oxygen and water. Those two don't really, you don't do too well without oxygen and water, Doug. And on top of that, now, one thing that my buddy's wife has told me as well, vast majority of people that are coming in now, they're sick, are extremely dehydrated. Now, why is that? Why are the people extremely dehydrated? Now, of course, some of them, they could be sick. They could be having diarrhea. They could be vomiting, so forth. Okay, you got those options. But not everybody. Everybody, she said, they're coming in is severely dehydrated. Well, because when you wear a mask all day, like a good little peasant, you don't drink water. It's very difficult to drink water. You got to pull your mask down. You drink a whole water. You don't drink a lot because you want to put your mask back up before anybody sees you take your mask down. And then, you know, you got to take another sip and you pull it to the side. And you look like you're, you know, fishing for otters that are coming out of the weeds. You look ridiculous. And so nobody really drinks enough water. Like, in Disney World, as Disney sales decline rapidly, they told everybody, mandatory to wear a mask. Mandatory to wear a mask. Cannot walk around without a mask. If you need to eat or drink, you must go to a designated area. Good little peasant. Go to your peasant area. Be a good little peasant. Drink your water. Eat your food. Put your mask back on. And you're allowed to walk again. If you get caught walking without a mask on, we're going to eject you from the park. And I believe Disney, too. Because they've ejected me numerous times. And I can't even go on the property anymore.
They've got your picture in the back room.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I know for a fact the last incident I told you about with, you know, downtown Disney, yeah, which is not Disney World. I told you about that. I'm on facial recognition. There's no way they have that quicker response time when I walk off the property.
That's right. You know, some Chinese doctor or Asian doctor, I suspect it's Chinese, but stated that. It was on Drudge or it was on, it was, I'm sorry, it wasn't on Drudge. It made headlines. But anyway, she said that, it's important when you have sex to wear a mask. Okay. Now, I don't know about you, Austin. I'm thinking about this and I'm thinking about, I'm not even going to go there. I'm just, yeah, there's just some practical issues there I've got with that.
Try to keep the show PG.
Yeah. It's going to get, but you know what? Seriously, D3 and K2, you've got that product. Healthmasters.com, folks. D3, K2, you've got that product. I believe in that product. I take it as recommended, along with B and C and the ultimate multiple. And you know what? I have not gotten sick. Okay. I felt a little, you know, punky here and there once in a while, as anyone normally would. But, and I'm not making any claims. I'm just saying that as far as I am concerned and my wife, I can't remember the last time that we were ill, you know, flu or anything like that. So, the difference, well, Health Masters nutritional supplements. That's the only difference I see. I'm just saying. So D3, K2, folks, get that too. Get that as well. Order that today, as well as Ultimate Multiple. Oh, so important. B and C and potassium, right? With iodine.
Absolutely.
You know, that's important too. I truly believe that if you have this in your system is built up, if you take these supplements routinely every day, I truly believe that you will. How do I say this without making any claims? We haven't gotten anything. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't know what else to say, but I can tell you this. It makes me feel good physically, psychologically, and it makes me feel good that you folks have these stellar products. I believe, and folks, I believe Health Masters has the best nutritional supplements on the market. I really do, or I wouldn't be. Look, I'm not getting paid to say this. I'm not. Seriously. I really believe that you folks have really, I don't know how you get this stuff and how you do what you do. I don't want to know. But it's the best out there, I believe. So thank you for what you do.
Absolutely. Thank you as well, Doug. And, you know, more and more people now, and I understand this, they're emailing me and they're saying, you know, what can I take right now to kind of bring my mood up? You know, everything is almost kind of depressing. I said, well, it's not depressing as long as you have, you know, Jesus Christ in your soul. I said, but I get it. It becomes taxing after a while. Doing these shows, you know, the same thing. Talking to people, constant conflicts, trying to stand up for freedom, what's right. You know, it wears you out after a while. And one thing I said, you know, there's three vitamins that I've consistently taken for a long period of time. And I can tell if I miss them. They're basically my three mood products. And one of them being the B complex, as you already mentioned, that one's crucial. I take three of those with my first meal. And then sometimes I'll take one or two at lunch. I'll take like five of those a day. The reason why? B complex is water soluble. B complex doesn't build in your system. So it's not something that you're going to take and it's going to build up and build up and build up and stay there for a while. It's water soluble. The next one is basically the 5-HTP. That's a really important vitamin as well, which helps out with natural serotonin production. And the other one is the omega-3 fatty acids, whether it be flaxseed oil, fish oil, the omega-3 fats are really crucial. And those right there, from what I found, really help out overall with energy, Doug, and with mood, and basically just kind of keeping you in a little bit better mood when all the stuff's going on as well.
Okay, so what was the second one? What was that second one?
5-HTP.
Okay.
5-hydroxytryptophan is what it is. And so it's a natural supplement that increases the body's natural serotonin production. It's actually one of the main ingredients the body needs to produce serotonin. And so it's controlled release. So that one stays in the bloodstream quite a while. So I usually take one at breakfast. I'll take one before I go to bed. And just a little tablet, controlled release, lasts about 8 hours. And I've gotten many of people that are like, you know, they take it, they're like, it really helps out. And if people are having a real-time issue with stress, then I throw in the cortisol buster. And that's a staple. So, I mean, if you got all those moving around and, I mean, you can't figure out how to get your head on straight, then I don't know what to tell you. Because, I mean, triple stack and then add the fourth cortisol buster if you need to, it's an incredible setup there. Because, I mean, we got to stay frosty right now and stay on top of everything because everything's coming at us so fast. And I don't think it's going to stop, Doug. You and me both, we're both in the same page that this is the beginning phases. This is always what happens in the beginning phase of an attempted communist revolution. And stuff escalates further and further and further until it's so overwhelming the majority of the populace will simply give in to communism for the request that it stops, that there's some type of normalcy. And that's what I think the overall goal is going to be with this. I think they're trying to do a warm-up session. They're getting stuff lined up. It's going to escalate further and further and further until people beg to have some type of more control put over them. People beg to have martial law. People beg to have their rights taken away. I mean, look what's going on in Australia now. I mean, you saw the video probably this week.
Oh, yeah.
A lady was arrested in her house for basically posting up on Facebook about basically starting that, anti-lockdown rally. They arrested her.
We have that video, by the way. But, yeah, it's horrifying.
Yeah, it's disturbing. And the level of confidence and calmness from the law enforcement is almost what's more disturbing because he's in there and he's like, yeah, we're going to arrest you and we have a warrant. We're seizing all of your electronics, your phone, your laptop, everything seized. And he's like, pursuant to code, you know, such and such. And you're basically being charged with incitement. And she's like, incitement? She's like, yeah, you basically posted the anti-protest rally that you're helping support and attend.
Right.
And? Yeah, that's enough to incite you to get a search warrant to come to your house, arrest you, and seize all your electronics. What? And now they've said now that over 80 people have been visited by law enforcement and told that if they post anything about that or if they attend that rally, they're going to be arrested on the spot. This is what happens in a dictatorship, so to speak, an oligarch that Australia is still under by the crown. People right. Don't agree, you do your own research. When they're fully disarmed. Remember in the 90s, they basically had a couple shootings. And the government came in and said it was best for the people if they did a full-blown gun buyback program. They came in and said, listen, we're going to buy your guns from you. We're going to buy your guns, give you top dollar, take them. We're going to dispose them. We're going to wreck them, cut them, chop them, burn them, squash them, whatever you want to do. People said, okay, you know what? I don't need these pesky rifles, whatever. Like, you can keep like a single over and under shotgun, you know. Right. It has to be disassembled in a lockbox with a, you know, a trigger lock on it in a back room behind a safe door at all times. And you have to have a permit every year. And they're like, okay, whatever. And they went along with it. And they allowed themselves to be disarmed. And now you see what happens when you're disarmed. And that's why I've told everybody, absolutely under no conditions can we compromise at all on our Second Amendment in this country. We've already lost way too much of it, way too much of it, especially in 1986 with the Hughes Amendment. With Reagan signed basically the Firearm Owner Protection Act, which doesn't allow you to purchase newly manufactured machine guns after 1986. That was abysmal. And they did that on purpose because they knew what was going to happen in the next 25 to 30 years with those machine guns. They're going to go through the roof. Nobody wants to shoot them because they're so expensive. On top of that, they become very difficult to repair after 30, 40, 50 years. They become relics, trying to get parts for them. Luckily, you can still buy. There's still plenty of transferable M16s and belt-fed M60s and stuff on the market you can still buy. But for how long? You know, another 20, 30 years? By 2050? Is the civilian, you know, firepower going to have any significant, you know, automatic weapons left? And people don't realize, unless you've operated those things and been around them and seen what they do, you know, automatic weapon fire is absolutely massive in a frontal assault. If somebody's coming at you and you have the ability to defend yourself with automatic weapon fire, I mean, you have the ammunition to feed it and the weapons and the correct tools and the squad to handle it, you can do a significant amount of support in defending an area. But see, that's why they know that. That's why they push so hard to even get the AR-15s out of the hands, because they don't even want people having semi-automatic weapons. And now we're seeing, I'm sure you probably saw this at the beginning of this week, I kind of want to get your take on it because I was on the show yesterday. What do you think about the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals and the North Circuit basically saying that the collection mass amount of calls without warrants was violating the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and basically said that Snowden really didn't do anything wrong with this U.S. Court of Appeals? What's your stance on that? I was looking at it today. You know, I mean, you think he'll be pardoned? I don't think he'll be pardoned. But, I mean, do you think he should be pardoned? I mean, I always have.
Okay. You know, people confuse Assange and Snowden. Let me just put that out there first. I think the ruling is interesting. It would probably, for analysis purposes, it would probably take longer to really dissect than we have. However, if I am understanding what was stated correctly, anymore I look at these rulings and I just wonder what's behind them. Okay. What am I missing here? I guess that's kind of what I'm looking at. What am I missing here? What are they going to drop to either counter this or to embolden more? And I don't think it's the latter. I think it's the former. So I don't know what to really make of this. I would be shooting in the dark. No pun intended there, but
that's why I want to ask you, because I was kind of a little, you know, taken back with it too, because, you know, it's something that we saw what he did, and a lot of people condemned him, a lot of people praised him. Regardless of where your stance was at now, you have the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit. They came in and said what the NSA was doing at the time he was working there, and just the mass dragnetting of phone calls without warrants, was a gross violation of international law and constitution law, and basically said that, you know, that was illegal. They could not do that. And what he exposed was the vast majority of that. If anybody's seen the movie Snowden, you get a little bit more take on it if you don't want to read about the whole thing. Some of it was a little but the movie in general got the gist of what happened. And so I saw this and I thought the same thing. I said, almost like they're throwing us a bone here. Like, oh yeah, by the way, hey, you know, everything's cool. It's okay. We messed up. We did all this illegal stuff. We're ruling and saying that it was wrong, but you know what? We won't do it again. don't pay attention to anything that's going on with Hillary or anything that's going on with Maxwell or anything that's going on behind the scenes with Obama. Don't look at any of that. Look at Snowden. You know what he did wasn't that wrong. Let's start protesting about Snowden now. It's always kind of when you see the front hand, always watch what the back hand is doing exactly. with these international bankers, because anytime they kind of give us something now, I've noticed – there's always something that they have planned on the backside to try to kind of obfuscate of what's really going on. Just like in California, I don't know if you saw this, the lawmakers on Monday reduced penalties for adults who basically have sex with a willing minor if the sex offender is in 10 years of the age of the victim. Honestly, that made me nauseous when I read the whole thing. You want to talk about pissing God Almighty off? I mean that seriously. You become a state that basically starts normalizing pedophilia and saying, hey, you know what? We know this 20-year-old basically had sex with a 10-year-old boy. He didn't know any better. You know, we're not going to put him on sex offenders list. It's not that big of a deal. It was allegedly consensual, even though you cannot have consensual sex with a 10-year-old. That's physically impossible because they don't know what they're doing. And the whole aspect of it being homosexual at the same time, they're saying – they're sick. I'm telling you, the people, the lawmakers in California are some sick, sick, perverted, sadistic individuals out there. Not all of them, vast majority of them, in my opinion. And we already know what it says in the Bible about what is going to happen and basically what would rather be happening to these individuals that mess with God's little ones and, you know, basically throwing a millstone around your neck. This is something that's very troubling to me, and the fact that I've seen so much positive support for it online, you know, on social media, it's been talked about, you know, all these gay right, transgender, queerosexuals, whatever they want to call themselves, they want to be a manatee one day and a sponge the next day, I don't understand it, but the fact that they've actually been praising this and hailing this like some type of really positive thing to be proud of, guys, really? This is really what you want to support? This is I'm not going to go any further on that, Doug. It's going to hack me off.
You know, yeah, and you see all of the moral, social constructs being just blown out of the water by these perverts. These people, in my view, they are perverted. They are perverts. They're perverse. Their actions are perverse. And they're attempting to normalize something that should never be normalized. But you know what? This is what, in my view, this is what the homosexual movement was all about.
Yep.
And you know, it's kind of funny because I use Grammarly. I use Grammarly, and some people, writers, will know what Grammarly is. It's a software program that corrects your language, your writing and your grammar, of course, hence the name. And what I found interesting was when I was writing something and I typed in the word homosexual and it flagged up and it said, you might want to think about using a synonym. Because homosexual is kind of outdated, and you know, it could be offensive to some. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, how far down this road have we gone? And I say that anecdotally, because I've got no words for these people, and I certainly have no use for these Muppets either. So I don't know, brother.
No, it's grossly disturbing, and I mean, it's exactly what you said. You know, when I was younger, the gay agenda, they pretty much called it, where they put it in some movies here and there, and they want to have same-sex marriage, and a lot of times people are like, you know what, whatever, I don't care, not my problem, let them pay marriage tax like everybody else, and then it escalated, and when I saw the Kenyan Obama come in and basically start demanding transgender rights. And now we know, pretty much in my opinion, from what I've seen, I personally think Michelle is a man. She's a transgender. After all the research that I've seen and people have shown me photos and videos, there's something weird going on over there. And that would make sense why he was so adamant about pushing transgender forcibly on the entire American population when they make up, I think, like 0.5%, maybe it's 4 now, 1%, 2% at the most. But when I last time I checked, it was like a couple of years back before it had become so mainstream cool to talk about and be tranny, it was like 0.6% of the United States population identifies transgender. That's it. So you're talking about, you know, one in 200th of a chance that somebody's going to be like that. And we're capitulating the entire American populace. That made no sense. But then when I realized what Obama was about and realizing that that's really the agenda he pushed and all the gay and homosexual allegations that were brought up on him repeatedly, I realized that's what he was pushing. Because, and then when that happened, I said, just wait. I said, this whole normalizing transgenderism, which all it is basically it's normalizing cross-dressing perversions, all it was. I said, you wait. I said, because the next thing will be age perversion, and they're going to start trying to normalize pedophilia. And here they have right now in California, basically, if you have consensual sex with a minor and the age is no more than 10 years apart, the judge has the right to essentially, if not drop the charges, not make you go on a sexual registry, which is grossly disturbing to me. And that is a pedophilia law. That's what it is. It is a pedophilia protection law designed to cover them up. Remember, California is steeped in this stuff out there, especially with the child trafficking and the Hollywood perverts. They want this stuff normalized. So if they ever get caught, if they ever come out, there's a reason why this stuff's going through right now. Everything that's come out with Maxwell, that's come out with Epstein, the stuff that we've seen now over the last couple of years has massively exposed these individuals with the sexual perversion they're involved in. They want to try to normalize it as quickly as they can. So that way, if something comes up, they can say, hey, you know what? Wasn't a big deal. This little boy was only 12 years old. I was 22 at the time. It wasn't that big of a deal, which is beyond perverted to me, but that's what they're trying to do. And they continue to do this. I mean, God's judgment will be upon us if we continue to allow them to do this and don't speak up and at least stand our ground and say, no, this is not okay. Especially if these bills come to your state where you have the ability to vote on them, you let your representative, you let your senators know absolutely not under any circumstances is this something we want in our state whatsoever, Doug.
Well, you know, you had mentioned Obama, and you mentioned about his sexual proclivities or his push in the support for this transgender, transsexual movement, the LGBTQ movement, and as a at the periphery, of course, of that, lowering the age of consent and all sorts of, I mean, this is all tied together. I had Jack Cashel in the studio on Monday, I believe it was, and he wrote this book, Unmasking Obama. Now, Jack Cashel is a best-selling author. To what you said here, okay, in part, and I had Larry Sinclair on the program some time ago. I don't even remember when, but he writes that back in January of 2008, Larry Sinclair actually went to the National Press Club and went on YouTube talking about Obama's sexuality and his two-day coke and sex romp with Obama back in 99. And so all of the evidence, both direct and indirect, circumstantial, does... You're right. I'm just going to say you're right. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why numerous people, come forward and start putting homosexual allegations towards you. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I can tell you right now, there's not ever going to be a single person with any type of validity that can come forward and make a homosexual comment about me. I'm sure the exact same thing about you.
Yeah.
You know, when you're strong in your stance with something, you already know. If somebody comes out and they try to say something, it's like, dude, just shut up. You sound stupid. Like, you obviously are just talking out of your butt. And so when you have people, though, that go through great detail in recording phone conversations or phone logs, credit card statements, all these details about what they do with the individual, and then it's kind of like, all right, what was really going on here? And, you know, it wasn't just one. It was numerous times. And then you have all the weirdness surrounding his time in the Senate and everything going up through his college years, and the fact that there was no aspect of anybody knowing who he was, nobody remembering him in college, no background on anything. The only thing that seems to pop up are homosexual allegations against this guy.
Yep.
I mean, then you got the whole context of the birth certificate. I'm not even going to get into that. That's a story for another day. So, I mean, to me, it really appears that, I mean, he really was the probably one of the largest Trojan horses we've ever had placed in the presidency of the United States, and that was to basically destabilize it, to cause as much race war as possible, and to push a very, very heavy transgender agenda, because the homosexual agenda was already alive and well. There was no reason to have to push that much harder. It was already going. The transgender agenda was something that nobody cared about, nobody agreed with, and very few people actually even wanted that. You know, and so then when he came forward and started to massively encourage it and then started to push it by decree, and then you have companies like Target and stuff come out and start doing exactly what they did and say, hey, you know what, if a dude wants to go in the women's restroom, they can do so because he identifies as a woman. People started to realize, okay, what was the real agenda here? And that was, in my opinion, to divide the entire country, because even up until that, you know, even under a Bush, the division in this country, I don't remember being not nearly this bad now. I mean, now it's like you have to be one side or the other. You're either pro-cop or you're anti-black, or you love cops. Yeah. And you know what I'm saying? Like, this,
yeah.
There is no, like, no, I support well-trained, educated law enforcement to protect and serve. I support all the black community and standing up for their rights as well, just like I support Hispanics or whites. Everybody in this country is an American if you're legally here, and I support your willing to be here and you being an American. It's a constitutional right. Let's stand up and do it. But there also has to be some type of reality and some type of law and order. If not, you have full-blown anarchy. And I'm the first one to tell you, like, I believe there should definitely be some reform in law enforcement agencies in some areas across the country. The aspect of doing no-knock search warrant raids at 4 a.m. on non-criminal offenders because they may have got a bag of pot mailed to them in from another state that was legal, that's asinine. Stuff like that needs to be completely and totally eliminated from ever happening. You know, if you want to say, hey, we want to protect this group or stop this from happening or prevent this, look at it from a standpoint. Why are you doing it? What is the reason you're doing a no-knock search warrant on a nonviolent offender 4 a.m. in the morning and throwing flashbangs in their house, and they're landing in child's daycare or little sleep packs and blowing half of their face off, and people say, oops, sorry, we threw the flashbang in the wrong direction? Why were you even there in the first place at 4 a.m. to do a no-knock search warrant? Was it really necessary? Could you not have stopped him in a traffic stop? Was he such a violent offender you were afraid he was going to pull out a belt-fed M240 from the front seat and unload on law enforcement? Really? Was that really necessary? And that's kind of my stance and argument that I've had. And even down here in Florida with some of the stuff that's happened, I've even said, hey, listen, there has to be some type of accountability. I'm all about law and order. I'm all about keeping the peace. But there has to be accountability and a need and a reason to do very, very aggressive tactics on citizens if you know that there's a likelihood you're not going to have a violent confrontation. There's no need to escalate it.
You make too much sense. You really do.
I try.
You're exactly correct. I think that we do have to look at certain aspects of law enforcement. Interestingly enough, Radley Balko wrote a book called it was about the militarization of police. I can't even remember
that.
But anyway, made some very, very good points. And to your point, yes, I agree. But I also find it interesting, too, going back to the LGBTQ thing, isn't it interesting how they are siding with Antifa and BLM to force their agenda into the American norm? And I find that very, very, very upsetting and telling as well, but upsetting.
I can't believe
we went through the hour. Wow. You're the man. Yeah, seriously.
I appreciate it.
Austin Brower, healthmasters.com. That's healthmasters.com. Folks, if you haven't done so already, please purchase your nutritional supplements from Health Masters. Do it today. Do it tonight after this show. Just do it. HR5, coupon code for various items. inserted in there. And you know what? Support Health Masters. Listen to their show, the Ted and Austin Brower show. That surprised me, boy. I'll tell you what, the music coming on. All right, folks, it is a long weekend. I just want to say thank you so very much for everything, for your support. We are going to be dark on Monday, coming back Tuesday strong. May God... Oh, yes, Patreon meeting on Sunday. I apologize for not mentioning that earlier. We are having a Patreon meeting on Sunday, and we've got something pretty interesting cooked up for you there. So I want to thank you again for all of that. May God bless each and every one of you. Thank you so much for your support, belief, and trust. And just be safe out there. Hit your knees, pray, repent, and pray for our nation, and pray for the future of our country. God bless.